consolidation. We have three cases on the calendar this morning. One from the PTAB and two from district courts. One of the district court cases is submitted on the briefs and will not be argued. And so the first case consolidated that we'll hear is or are Caris MPI versus Foundation Medicine, 2018-87. Mr. Singer, and will you begin with the 1887 case with the three patents and then get to
absolutely.
The 660 with one?
It's, may it please the court, and it's really nice to be back here in person. I have to say the last time I was here was arguing for the PTAB on this very case, the Friday before the world changed.
So, nice to have you here.
In both of these appeals, the board, and particularly Judge Lurie, beginning with the foundational patents, the board made essentially the same error in applying the BRI standard, essentially, as it were, emphasizing the B at the expense of the R, to yield a claim construction in the foundational patents that swept in the prior art that was criticized in the specification, and in the CIP patent that was improved upon. With respect to the foundational patents, the board's ultimate construction did not take into account step B2 of the claims. And the step B2 of the claims, each of the three patents, links the drugs that the system is looking at to the markers, the genetic markers. And those genetic markers, as was not disputed below, and as the board ultimately found, are lineage independent. And by linking the drugs to the markers, you end up with a lineage independent list of drugs.
Mr. Singer, I'd like to ask you generally, generating a report is not very inventive. Comparing data is not very inventive. The inventiveness here would seem to be clinical. I noticed with one of these patents there are eight inventors, which seems very strange for an invention of this sort. But the invention would seem to be a recognition that a drug would be effective against a tumor, and that was determined by the genetics, by the marker, not by the location of the tumor. And that would seem to be something determined by clinicians. Are all of your inventors doctors, clinicians working in the laboratory?
So on the, Judge Lurie, the eight inventors is on the continuation in part. The first, the foundational patents are invented by physicians. And the physicians, you have it correct, that what they did was realize that, or determine through experimentation and also conceive, that it was improper is not the right word, it was limiting to look only at the, or to continue 50 years of the same practice of looking at the quote-unquote lineage, the site of origin of
the
cancer.
So why do these claims read generating a report rather than a method of treatment? If they discovered that a certain drug is beneficial against a certain tumor unexpectedly, I mean, that's surely patentable.
So the approach wasn't for a specific drug, Your Honor. It's for a treatment of cancer. Generating the report, if you want, it's not reflected in the record. That was a 101 issue in the prosecution.
Not surprising.
that's where that came from. But with respect to the inventiveness aspect, you have to remember the claims are directed to any patient with any type of cancer. And so what the claims are regarding is looking at that we don't really care anymore. We, the inventors, Drs. Von Hoff and Dr. Penny, we don't really care anymore what type of cancer that patient has, where the origin is. You just give me the tumor. I will look at the markers. We will run the markers. We will link those markers to drugs. Those drugs may be on-label, they may be off-label, but we will link those drugs to the markers, and from there we will select for the patient. And that was an absolute paradigm change from what was done priorly as the director of the National Cancer Institute.
Isn't that the discovery, though, linking the therapeutic drugs to markers?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that the actual inventive moment? The linkage of the therapeutic drugs to the markers?
It is, in respect to without the hidebound, if you will, prior paradigm of using the lineage of the cancer.
But okay, so wasn't it known to already optimize treatments by looking at the molecular profile of a patient and based on the genotype, considering various therapeutic agents?
Only within the lineage. So that's the prior art. So the prior art is...
Okay, so that was known. But it was known in combination with considering cancer lineage.
Right, exactly.
And then this claim doesn't say anything about don't consider cancer lineage.
What it absolutely does, in effect of its language, right? It doesn't use the words that the board was looking for. The board was looking for some proxy of that. But they didn't apply the actual language as written, Your Honor.
But putting aside whether you can put a limitation into this otherwise very broad claim language, and we'll get to that in a second, what do you do about the whole list of things in the red brief where they explain that Herceptin and Erbitux and all of those other products did exactly what you're saying that prior art didn't know how to do?
Your Honor, those were also looking within the lineage. If you look at those articles, you'll see.
No, each one of them says, but not just for that particular cancer. They could also apply to other cancers.
It applies to other cancers in the lineage. So if you look at those prior art articles, Your Honor, which were not, I'll make the point, they're not part of a ground here. But if you look at them, you'll see they're sorted by disease. And so what they're still looking at, if this were lineage independent, they wouldn't be looking at the disease. They wouldn't care about the type of cancer that the patient had. They would simply be looking at the molecular markers.
Well, the mere fact that they might have started by realizing it works well for breast cancer doesn't mean that they didn't also appreciate before the priority date that it worked well for other cancers.
Well, I guess I disagree with that, Your Honor. What the articles are talking about in terms of the other uses of these drugs is, in fact, in the lineage. So if we will investigate Herceptin in another cancer, and maybe it'll work in another cancer in that lineage, right? Not, we will investigate Herceptin based on the HER2 marker in any cancer, in all cancers. Again, and this is, well, I mean, I would ask the court to think about, in terms of paradigm shifts, it's a significant and important shift here where the prior art looked at lineage, and yes, looked at lineage with markers, and then shifted from, we don't care about the lineage at all. We're going to just simply look at the markers, and we're going to test if we don't care if the cancer comes from breast, pancreas, etc. We don't even want that information. And then we're going to go and find whether or not the markers match up to the drugs, and that's the invention. That was the conception.
But you're
here
concerned with whether lineage independence is in the claims. It wasn't, it was in the claims of a parent application and deleted, right?
The phrase, I think, was single disease restricted, that was deleted. And Judge Lori, that's neither.
And so why doesn't that carry through here?
Because again, the
indicating what the inventors thought all that language meant.
Yeah, well, it's the language is in the specification, and this court's authorities say we have to look at the invention and specification. But if you simply apply the language in the claims.
You can't ignore the claims, and you actually amended the language in the claims to take out what would have made it clear, or at least more clear.
Yeah, and I'm not asking at all to ignore the claims. And if you look, it's right in our brief. If you follow the language of the claims, whether you want to put the words lineage independent in there or not, if you follow the language of the claims, the drugs are linked to the markers. The markers are lineage independent. Therefore, you get a lineage independent list of drugs. Just applying the words of the claim. And the board did not do that. Manifestly did not do that. At page 827, for example, of the 350 opinion.
What language in the claim itself? So start with the claim. What language in the claim do you say specifically makes it clear that lineage independence is within the claim?
Let me get the precise language. So it's step B2, Your Honor. In each of the patents, I'll just go to the 193 patent because I have it handy, Appendix 239, right? So step B2 is at least one computer database comprising, and then if you go to B2, a listing of available therapeutic agents for each of the plurality of the molecular targets, right? And those molecular targets are lineage independent. They're not associated with any particular type of cancer or one cancer, and so therefore you get a list by necessity that is lineage independent. And that's what the board didn't do. They didn't take that step. They were looking for language. I understand that, and we deleted language in the file history, and I wish we had. It would have been a lot clearer, I suppose. But at the end of the day, the job of the courts is to apply the language as written, and that's all we're asking for. And when the board got to step B2, it didn't apply it. If you look at their opinion, the board went right to the result.
Well,
right?
I guess what I'm wondering is, because this is an open-ended comprising claim, why can't there be a consideration of cancer lineage of a patient also considered and be within the scope of this open-ended comprising claim?
Because the drugs, Your Honor, have to be tied to this lineage-independent list of markers. You could do that too, but you still have to do the first thing. So if you were appending lineage dependence onto it, you'd still have to do the lineage-independent analysis to generate the recommended therapy. Yep, so the fact that it's comprising shouldn't change the analysis.
But the list is not limiting because you have the comprising language.
The list is required, though, to be for each of the molecular targets. Those molecular targets, right there, at a minimum, have to have the 7 listed in the claims. And those 7, as the board found, and as wasn't disputed below, are lineage independent. So if you link drugs to a lineage independent list, you get lineage-independent drugs.
So you're saying that even if you put something, an input that's lineage-independent, you could never have an output that's not?
Let me see if I understand your question. If I use the system of the claim, could I get an output that was lineage-dependent?
Is mm-hmm.
that, no. You might get a result, Your Honor, that's on label. Right? So you might get a result that's on label, but you wouldn't be selecting the drugs in an on label, off label paradigm. You'd be selecting the drug.
Your answer is actually yes.
Right.
But.
No, I don't think so. I think to conflate the result
of the claim, so to look at. Would you say an on label drug is lineage dependent?
It depends how you got there, Your Honor. If you end up, and I think that was in the Bisgrove study, if you look at the Bisgrove study, looking at things in a lineage-independent way, choosing the drugs, I choose to treat this tumor based on the markers, and I use markers that are lineage-independent. I might end up treating that tumor, let's just make it easy, let's make it breast cancer, I may end up treating that tumor, the markers may say, use a breast cancer drug. The markers may say something as well, but that's very different. Looking at the output is very different than looking at the inputs that go in. And this
Did
is all Bisgrove about the inputs that go in.
Did Bisgrove even use the claimed system?
Bisgrove used the, that was a point of dispute below. The board found that Bisgrove didn't use the particular computer, that it hadn't demonstrated that with particular computer, but it absolutely used the lineage independent selection of drugs by looking at the tumors.
Well, the particular computer is a particular limitation, right?
It is, but the court's authorities in terms of secondary indicia regard about the inventive aspect of the invention. And the specification makes clear that the computer aspects are not the inventive aspect here. It's what we talked about at the beginning, the
now,
selection
the claim,
of drugs.
The claim must include lineage independent situations, but you wanted to preclude lineage dependent. You want it to be lineage independent only.
I think Your Honor.
Because otherwise we're in trouble with a prior op.
Sure, sure. I think by operation of the words in the claim, it is lineage independent. If I have a lineage independent set of markers, and then I utilize and link the drugs to those markers so that I get a lineage independent set of drugs, and that's step B2 in each of the patents. I have a lineage-independent system.
But the board said, yes, it could be lineage-independent, but it also could be lineage-dependent.
And that's the error that the board made. Right? The board, if you look at, Your Honor, at page, for example, 827 of the 350, right, they said that they looked at the output. Right? It doesn't require the identification of all available therapeutic agents, including off-label. So the board equated the result. I get to the result of an off-label drug as lineage independent.
Those are two different things. Why don't you get to 660?
Okay, let me move on to the 660.
And then we'll want to get to claim 12.
Yes. So with respect to the 660, I think I described at the beginning that the error was a similar in nature in emphasizing the broadest aspect and not the what you would regard the more reasonable aspect. And again, the board was fixated on finding particular words in the claim and didn't focus on the claim language that was actually there. And with respect to the claim, you're smiling. You're going to ask me a question. That's fine.
The board focused on particular words but didn't look to the language.
The absence
of
language.
That's a little bit circular.
That they focused on the absence of words as opposed to the language that was actually there.
Why is the language likely lack of benefit limitation in Claim 12 even meaningful if you say it's already in Claim 1?
Because Claim 12 is about the report, Your Honor. If you look at the language of Claim 12, it's about generating a both of them are about generating a report, and the report of Claim 12 is different than the report of Claim 1. The report of Claim 1 only requires you report drugs that have likely benefit, if there are any. The report of Claim 12 requires the additional reporting of a contraindication marker and the contraindicated drug. So there's just two different reports, that's all. So that's why it matters.
But you argue that Claim 1 actually has a contraindication limitation.
It has a requirement that you look at the information that is in the claim. So the claim has multiple markers in the claim that only served a purpose at the time of the invention for contraindication, BRAF and PIK3CA. And the board's construction to construe likely benefit to encompass identifying drugs that wouldn't be of likely benefit because they were contraindicated is erroneous. That's the phraseology the board didn't apply with respect to Claim 1.
The board questioned whether a mutational analysis for some of these markers is absolutely required by this claim. Because this claim, it just very broadly says, compare molecular profile test values with a corresponding reference value. And the way you would like us to read the claim is, okay, there for some of these listed markers, you do one kind of analysis, a mutational analysis. For other markers recited in this claim, you're going to do a completely different kind of analysis. Is that fair to say?
No, I don't think that's what we're asking. We're asking that the claims be construed at the time of the invention and the understanding of the person of skill in the art. And the person of skill
But the comparison test for some of these markers is going to be of a different nature than the comparison test being done for other markers.
The comparison test is going to embrace the mutational analysis for BRAF, for sure.
Well, you want, for a couple of these markers, the comparison to be a mutational analysis, right?
I would say it would include the BRAF. For BRAF, it would include
right.
mutational analysis.
And then for
analysis.
Other markers, you wouldn't be doing mutational analysis.
No, you'd do a mutational analysis if that was available at the time of the invention. We're talking about in 2000, at the time of the invention.
But I guess the relevant information you want to extract from these comparisons for these different markers is one is you're looking at different levels of biological activity. Another one, you're looking for a mutation. And then if there is a mutation, then that would suggest some contraindication. Right?
For BRAF, I agree with you on that.
So then that's why I'm saying you're asking us to understand this comparison step to be undertaking two different kinds of comparisons for these different markers that you've listed.
I guess I don't agree, Judge Chen. I think that the comparison step is asking to compare. We're talking about the testing of the markers. BRAF only had utility at the time of the invention to indicate contraindication. And the comparison step simply is the drug indicated by a if you will, overexpression or underexpression of the marker, or mutation or not, lack of mutation by the marker? Is the drug indicated? And then, is it contraindicated by a different marker? I.e., does it have likely benefit altogether? I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I'm happy to keep answering questions.
We will save it for you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Singer, Mr. Wolf.
Would you mind going backwards for just a second in
of
terms of
not.
The way your friend on the other side went? And I want you to address that last point with respect to Claim 12.
Which last point specifically?
About the contraindications.
Yes, Your Honor. So on the BRAF point specifically, I agree with His Honor about the different testing, but there's even a shorter route to the same result. At A1722, 14 to 20, and this is throughout the patent, but I'm going to pick one quote. The patentee said, quote, one may find additional targets or molecular findings that can be exploited, end quote. And the board picked up on this and the similar quotes and said, and this is at A18, the 660 patent contemplates that the therapeutic agent database would be continuously updated as new agents and new associations are discovered, end quote. So they suggest to us that we must know that you are doing contraindication, as they put it, we would say likely lack of benefit, interrogation, because of the presence of BRAF in the claim, when in the very patent they say, we may find new indications. We may find new likely benefits. Don't hold us to what exists now. We're going to find in the future that BRAF may be helpful, not just not helpful. And so this was important to the board correctly. If you're going to say in your patent, don't hold us to the state of the art now, well then, you're not held to the state of the art for all purposes. So I agree with His Honor, but I think it's kind of more fundamental than that. You can't draw the assumption that, you know, kind of prune or dive deep to say, oh, obviously they meant looking for likely lack of benefit, when they've told us in the patent, we're going to keep looking for benefits for all these different markers. So I think that's maybe the simpler route to the same point, Your Honor.
Okay.
Would Your Honor prefer I start with the 1887 or the 1886 appeal?
87, fine.
Your Honor, and Judge O'Malley, you asked a very important question, and I'm going to use Herceptin as the example. In 1998, Herceptin was approved for breast cancer based on HER2 overexpression. That was the insight. And at A6396 and elsewhere in the record, we see scientists, physicians saying, aha, if overexpression of HER2 is important in this context, it might be important in other contexts. And so we see investigations, for example, of bladder and ovarian cancer. Now, what counsel just did, and this has been a little bit of a frustration for us throughout the litigation, throughout the PTAP proceeding, the meaning of lineage independent seems to change from brief to brief, sometimes even from page to page, and even today we heard a different meaning. Because what counsel suggested is that bladder or ovarian cancer that was reached because of not the breast cancer link, but the HER2 link, at the genotyping link, that is now, and I wrote this down, in that lineage. How is bladder and ovarian cancer in the lineage of breast cancer?
I think he's saying they're all can be female-related things, I guess.
I hope that wasn't what he was suggesting. I think it's just that this is an amorphous concept that if scientists knew it well enough, then we're going to kind of push it to the side and try to exclude it as a matter of prior art. And if they didn't know it well enough, we're going to say we get credit for it. But fundamentally, Your Honor's point was absolutely right, and both of Your Honor's points about the underlying insight that we should be looking to the genotyping, the genetic markers, not necessarily to the cancer, the one original cancer, that was well known. And we laid out five examples with Herceptin and Erbitux and Iressa and Gleevec. And then more generally, Dr. Spellman talked about, let me get this right, the Sawyer 2004 article that went into this in great detail, why you want to look at the markers.
But why isn't there part of the prior art cited here, and maybe I've missed it, showing the activity of cancer agents against particular genotype aside from location of the tumor. I mean, if that was old, not very old, but in effective prior art discovered by others than these inventors, why isn't that the issue here?
Your Honor, we have Liu explicitly, and I hate to quote long quotes in court, but I think it's an important one, to predict, this is from A6878, so this is the lead prior art reference. The system of Liu, which otherwise is identical, the same steps, the same computer, the same database, the same interrogation, the system can be used to predict or identify the optimum drug for treating cancers other than breast cancer, and can be used to identify an optimum drug for treating virtually any disease for which there exists an established correlation between a patient's genotype and the efficacy and toxicity of each group of drugs developed to treat the general condition.
And what was the date of that?
Liu was 3 years before the critical date, I believe. Mm-hmm. And critically, that's the magic language there, the patient genotype, not the patient's cancer type, the genotype. And then, of course, we get to Illumina, which is nothing but an assay of all of the relevant genotypes at the time. I believe 512, that number's off the top of my head. And so all the board did is it said you take Liu, and then pre-critical date, you take the assay that is most contemporary at the time, and you cover every single one of the markers in every single one of the claims. So it's whether or not you agree with the board's decision to eliminate cancer lineage independence, or rather not to incorporate, I don't want to say eliminate, to not incorporate cancer lineage independence, even if you understand what that term means. And just to suggest the mischief of the term or the concept or the amorphousness or the fuzziness or whatever word you want to use, if you look at column 14, A237, in back-to-back sentences, there is a different definition of what this concept is supposed to mean. On the one hand, it says it's not previously associated with a specific disease, and then immediately above the table, it says, based on a cancer that has a known target, that has an associated known drug. Isn't that the definition of something being previously associated with the disease? So again, I'm not sure where the line is drawn. With that, if there are no further questions, I'd like to move on to the 1886 appeal, if I may, Your Honor. I'd like to point out that, and particularly on Claim 12, we're not exactly sure what the board thought likely lack of benefit meant. But we are sure why the board found rejected the invalidity challenge to Claim 12. And this is from A21. Quote, the dispute over Claim 12 focuses on whether the requirement that the report indicate a, quote, likely lack of benefit, end quote, is satisfied with the prior art's disclosure indicating only that the value for markers fall within a normal range. That's the dispute. That is the sum total of the dispute. What the board did, I think, and again, it's a little bit ambiguous, is said, we're going to equate likely lack of benefit with contraindication, and then we're going to find that contraindication, which isn't in the claim, so we're going to construe a construction, we're going to find that contraindication excludes normal readings and requires negative predictive biomarkers. Now, let me use a simple analogy to explain why we disagree with this respectfully. And this is an oversimplification, but I take Advil far too frequently given how much damage I've done to my knees through the years. Advil works by reducing inflammation. And again, it may have others, but let's simplify it by analogy. Advil works by reducing inflammation. If I run a report that says my inflammation levels are normal, I now know that Advil is not likely to help that pain in my knee, that there's another source, there's another problem, there needs to be another solution. So depending on the context, it is perfectly reasonable to say that a normal reading gives me important information. And that's exactly the case with Herceptin and HER2. Herceptin works if the reason the patient has breast cancer is because of an overexpression of HER2.
Now, we understand your point.
Yes, Your Honor.
Likely lack of benefit in the most ordinary sense could include normal readings.
Yes, Your Honor.
But the board appears to be understanding this term, likely lack of benefit, in the context of this patent, in the context of this disclosure, and the fact that Claim 12 talks about identifying yet another marker, identifying yet another agent, and in the context of this patent, it talks about repeatedly how you would do that when you discover some kind of contraindication. And then when it says contraindication, what it means by that is determining that a given therapeutic agent that you would expect to work actually wouldn't work because perhaps there's some kind of resistance to it based on a mutational analysis. And so therefore, in the context of this patent, likely lack of a benefit means something particular and not so general. So that's the thing, that's the hurdle you've got to get over. Not I mean, your Advil hypothetical, I understand it, but that hypothetical is divorced from the context of this patent. We have to read this claim inside the context of this integrated legal instrument.
Understood, Your Honor. But here's where I would push back and say, let's start from first principles. The term says likely lack of benefit. And I think we all know what that means in a vacuum, right? It means it's less likely to work or unlikely to work, whatever particular modifier you want to use. All right. Is there anything in the claim language itself, any surrounding language that narrows that would exclude a normal indication as evidence that something is unlikely to work? I don't think the board or Karis has pointed to any claim language that would accomplish that result. That would result
right,
in that.
You begin with the plain language and sort of the dictionary definition of contraindication, which means that it's not just not going to benefit, but it's actually going to hurt.
Indeed. And it's interesting, Your Honor, because, of course, contraindication is not in the claim language. And it's odd that the PTAB kept swapping in that word. I mean, intuitively, I think contraindication means something different than likely lack of benefit. I think it means that it's affirmatively going to hurt you. That's my intuition. I'm not sure that's the board's intuition, but that's mine. But I think there is no reason to do this kind of two-step that the board does, likely lack of benefit, contraindication. Okay, what does contraindication mean when the contraindication doesn't appear in the claim? Contraindication isn't something we're being asked to interpret. So let's go back to likely lack of benefit and say, what does the spec, what do the claims, what does the wrapper tell us about likely lack of benefit? And I don't think we see any evidence in either of any of those three sources, the three things that we all grew up looking at, that says likely lack of benefit should mean anything different. And I'd like to, if I could go to the Von Hoff, or the actual reference, and look at figure 3B. And this is at 2777. And
this is the figure that's reporting normal values?
Right. Well, and not just. I want to kind of point this, put this in the language of the claim. If I have, so this is what the patentee is saying, this is an example of my invention. If I have GI cancer, okay, gastric cancer, and this report is run. This report tells me that Herceptin is unlikely to work, but Gleevec is likely to work. Exactly what counsel just told us, claim 12 requires the claims, and let me just walk you through it. C-kit we see as positive specific, so that I think they would acknowledge that this indicates a likely benefit, right? That's the prototypical case of their likely benefit as called for by the claims. There's a positive, there's an overexpression, and so Gleevec would work there. We see up above Herceptin, which we now know also treats gastric cancer through the same mechanism it treats breast cancer, if there's an overexpression of HER2, we know that Herceptin would be a bad idea, or at least not likely to work idea, for gastric cancer based on this same report. So, and just to gild the lily here, not to make too much of it, but we see just below C-kit, one of the other markers that's in the claims, EGFR, which is also negative. So what we're being told by this report is there are two normal readings that tell us don't use Herceptin and don't use Erbitux, but do use Gleevec in the prior art. In one page, all in one place, no combination necessary.
Based on normal values, right?
Well, right. The Herceptin, exactly. Right.
Right.
Yes.
And this patent, I know it says contraindication, and I know there's a general understanding of what that means, but the way this patent uses the term contraindicate is a shorthand, basically, to mean indication of a resistance to a particular drug. So that if that's how they're using it, and that's how they are describing what a lack of a benefit or a lack of clinical benefit means in the context of this patent, then why can't we understand the claim terminology of likely lack of a benefit to mean basically a resistance to a particular therapeutic drug?
That's an excellent point, Your Honor. If the term contraindicate had appeared in the claim, then I think we could look to the specification and we could see that the gloss or the nuance or the connotation, whatever you want to call it, a contraindication, not just that something doesn't work because there's no inflammation, but because it doesn't work because there's actually some conflict, as it were. Again, that's not a technical medical term, but I think Your Honor understands my point. If contraindication were the term in the claim, we might have a closer fight and we'd have more of a textual analysis, and then we'd be pointing you to suggestions in column 51 where contraindicate seems to be used as a verb, not a noun, and we could have gotten into a much different discussion. But they didn't choose to use the word contraindicate in the claim. They chose to use the phrase less likely to benefit. And that's a phrase that we all understand. And there's no suggestion, there's no IE, there's no by that we mean, anywhere that should change that common meaning.
What do you think figure 40B is illustrating and describing?
Figure
40B,
yeah,
the one that's identifying some therapeutic agents and then indicates at the top of the column lack of clinical benefit.
Yeah. And importantly about figure 40B, of course, Your Honor, none of the identified markers are in figure 40B in that context. Your Honor, if I could find it, I'm sorry, there's too many pages here.
You're having a common problem.
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. So, figure 40B is one of the set of reports that are exemplars from the patent, right? If we look at 40B, there is not a single, and we see the heading, lack of clinical benefit, which is still a third term, but close to likely lack of benefit, right? There is not a single reference to any of the markers at issue here. So there's nothing to be gleaned one way or the other. Second thing I'd say about figure 40B is, of course...
I'm sorry, before you go on,
yes,
you're saying the biomarker column, those identified markers are different from the recited markers in the claim?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I believe there's one overlap in the previous with clinical benefit, the C-kit.
40A.
40A. I believe C-kit is the only overlap. And counsel will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that none of those, starting with MGMT down in figure 40B, I believe none of those are in the claim. The other thing I'd note is many of these reports are not called for in the claims. So the reference is exemplary, they're not called for in the claims. But most fundamentally, the specific examples they give show that there is an increase in expression, an overexpression. But you know, Your Honor, there's no dispute that an underexpression, the Patent Office wouldn't suggest that an underexpression can satisfy the claims. And there's no underexpression in this either. So we're at risk of overreading, to use the phrase again, overreading the import of Figure 40B, if we say anything can be made from the fact that all of the exemplars are indicating likely lack of benefit because of overexpression. Did my answer not? So, Your Honor, I think what you're suggesting is that there's something that may be read, or at least questioning, whether something could be read in the fact that all of the exemplars in 40B of likely lack of benefit, the result is an overexpression of the given gene or protein, whichever the case may be. Is that understanding roughly what you're asking?
I'm trying to figure out if 40B is enough to suggest lack of benefit should be understood to be resistance to a drug.
Your Honor, I don't think it is, and for the reasons I gave. One, it doesn't have anything to do with the particular markers at issue. So the fact that these markers are resistant because of...
I understand the specifics of individual markers, but I'm talking more about the concept of how this patent understands lack of benefit.
Your Honor, I think that this patent understands likely lack of benefit to mean the drug won't work or is less likely to work or is unlikely to work. The reason why it's unlikely...
Where would that be in the specification?
Your Honor, that's tricky because it doesn't actually use that phrase, but if you look at column 51, I believe it's 51... The candidate treatment selected can depend on...
I'm sorry, what line are you on?
Yes, sorry. Starting at 40, well, start at 46. As a non-limiting example, molecular profiling might reveal that the EGFR gene is amplified or overexpressed, thus indicating selection of a treatment that can block EGFR activity, etc. It goes on to simply say, the question is, does it succeed in solving the problem? There's no suggestion in that paragraph.
I mean, the bottom of that same paragraph, it starts talking about, around line 59, molecular profiling may also reveal that some or all of these treatments are likely to be less effective. For example, patients taking G or E eventually develop drug-resistance mutations in EGFR. Accordingly, the presence of a drug-resistance mutation would contraindicate selection of the small molecule kinase inhibitors. So this right here is right in line with kind of my working understanding of what this patent is describing.
Your Honor, that is an example of how a drug might fail. But there's no suggestion that that is the only example of how a drug might fail. There's no lexicography, there's no disclaimer, and so the fact that there are exemplars that would support it doesn't mean that we should exclude it. With that, Your Honor, unless there are further questions, I'm deep in my rebuttal time.
Last question. How should Claim 12 have been written to capture the actual thought that they invented and disclosed?
I think it was written to capture. I don't think there's anything in this patent that suggests. So let's take a step back. What counsel suggested the invention was is look at the particular biomarker, and based on that biomarker, the comparison of the normal to the patient, and based on what you know about the drug, the available therapeutic. Should you or should you not use it? Is it likely to be effective or likely not to be effective? And there are lots of different reasons why a drug might not be effective. And I don't think they wrote this. I mean, think about it the other way. Imagine if we were in court arguing non-infringement because although our system spits out a report that does exactly what the claim says and says don't use Herceptin, it is not likely to be effective.
Is the answer that they should have written in if once you identify it? Resistance to a drug.
Something like that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wolf, we will save 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
If it turns out you have something to rebut.
Understand.
12. Mr. Singer, you have 5 minutes plus, close to 6 minutes.
I want you to start there, too.
Yeah, of course.
Because, I mean, everyone in America knows that whether you're HER2 negative or HER2 positive, the question is, does Herceptin help you? Not, is it going to hurt you? The question is, it going to help you? So that's why I don't understand how you can say that likely lack of benefit means the same thing as a contraindication.
So I was going to pick up right where counsel left off, and we looked at 40B and 40A, but we didn't look at 40E. Figure 40E, Your Honor, that actually does have one of the markers in the claim that's easy to spot, and we all apologize for the blurriness of this, but if you look at A166, it answers the question here with respect to, for example, P10. In the middle column, about the 10th line down, you'll see P10, which is one of the claimed markers, and it describes it as no change. Now, counsel's argument was that no change tells you information about whether something is likely to benefit or not likely to benefit. And yet P10, which no change, the normal result or whatever it is not listed, if you will, on figure 40B as a likely lack of clinical benefit. That is the concept that the claims require. Something is, in fact, resistant, something that was indicated or might be indicated for the patient based on one marker, is then contraindicated by the resistance of another. Right? That's what the board construed. And we have
so
a great.
Why wasn't the word contraindicated used?
Pardon me?
The word contraindication does not appear in the claims.
It does not appear in the claims, but it's using the phraseology of these reports, right? The 40A and 40B, clinical benefit, likely lack of clinical benefit. And 40E tells you what was tested, as does 40D, I believe, as well. And it tells you when there's no change, which is what the board found. It doesn't list it as likely lack of clinical benefit because you're looking for that resistance to something that was already indicated.
Everything you just said might be consistent with how you want us to translate likely lack of benefit, but it doesn't tell us why we must think of likely lack of benefit in that way.
Well,
what is it about this patent that demands us to construe this rather broad, vague language to be about resistance to drug mutation, contraindication, whatever you want to use to swap in for likely lack of benefit?
The concepts in the specification that we've gone through, the specification repeatedly describes the invention as using that concept of contraindication in the comparison step. It doesn't use the word. And then it has exemplar reports which use phraseology that's very, very close to what is in the claims. Instead of the word likely, it uses clinical. And so the phraseology in the figures is very nearly the same phraseology in the claims. And so the phraseology in the figures should govern the phraseology in the claims where there is support in the specification otherwise, which the board also found. The discussion about, I think, column 51, Your Honor, with respect to actually equating the word contraindicate to something where it's a resistance. Does that answer your question, I hope?
What column is that where you equate?
So if you look at column 51, Judge O'Malley, if you go to the bottom there, I think counsel went through that with Judge Chen, describing, if you look at line 58, continuing with the exemplary embodiment, profiling may also reveal that some or all of these genes.
Right, but again, this goes back to the whole notion of that's using contraindicate as a verb
right
there.
Right, the word contraindicate, you were asking whether it's equated to resistance. That's what I understood your question.
Right, but here they're talking about contraindicate the selection, so that's using contraindicate as a verb.
Right, to contraindicate something that already has been indicated.
Contraindicate the selection, meaning don't go there, don't bother to go there.
That's right.
That's very different from what the common understanding meaning of contraindication with respect to medications.
It is different, right? And so the patent is using, to the extent we're arguing about what the construction within the construction, right? The board construed likely less lack of benefit to require this contraindication concept as used in the patents, not the medical use of the terminology. That's not what the board was talking about.
This patent basically hijacks the word contraindicate and uses it in a different way.
It does. I mean, that's what it does. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that under this court's authorities to use a word in a different way than what someone might use it. That is different than don't use this, right? It's contraindicated for a medical reason. Okay. Finally, with respect to I just want to say one last word about the prior art use of that was raised in the von Hoff, the charts, the negative and the no change. I couldn't quite tell if there was an argument in the briefs that this wasn't considered by the board. It absolutely was considered by the board. The petition for IPR equated figures 3B and 3C. The board quoted the petition, equating the two as no change to the extent that that was an issue. I wasn't quite sure from the argument where there was a distinction being made between no change and negative. That was equated before the board in the petition, and the board cited it as having considered both of those figures in the prior art.
So, does Karas have any patents or continuations off of these specifications that use words like contraindicate or resistance to a drug or without considering cancer lineage or any of that? I'm talking about both appeals.
No. The patent, there's a patent that relates to off-label, Your Honor, the non-disease specific agent. But there is not something that talks about non-disease lineage or outside the lineage, those kinds of concepts, or the phrase contraindication. This is how Karas claimed it.
You have something that says non-disease specific.
Pardon me?
You have a claim that says something like non-disease specific.
Agent, which is defined as an off-label agent.
Okay,
if there's any other questions.
And
thank you.
Claim 12 is asserted in the litigation somewhere?
It is.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Wolf has some rebuttal time.
Yes, Your Honor, two brief points.
On cross-appeal.
Very briefly, Your Honor, at the opening brief in the 1886 appeal at footnote 2, page 8, Karas said, there was much debate before the board as to the meaning of the word contraindicated as used by doctors. As the record reflects, the word can mean something far more serious to doctors than its use in the 660 patent specification as meaning lack of efficacy. That is how they told us in the brief that contraindication should be understood, essentially synonymous with likely lack of benefit, without all of the gloss that they have tried to import about resistance or the battle I was describing earlier. Emphasizing that point, if we were talking about column 51, if we go to, this is at A197, 51, roughly line 31, there is a series of exemplars of how this can work. And they say, quote, the best evidence can be used as the basis for a rule. The simplest rules are constructed in the format of, quote, if biomarker positive, then treatment option one, else treatment option two. A neutral, natural, normal result that gives treatment option two, specifically called out in the specification, consistent with the plain meaning of claim 12. Respectfully, the PTAB did everything right here except overreading the meaning of likely lack of benefit in claim 12. Thank you for your time, Your Honors, and it's wonderful to be back live.
Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under submission.